The Executive Leadership Conference is about how to use the most current technology to help government agencies carry out their missions. The ELC, of course, taking place in Williamsburg, where about 850 contractors and federal executives are gathered. Federal News Radio's Tom Temin is there with a person who has one of the most unusual titles in government, Geospatial Information Officer. Tom, who do you have down there?
Good morning, Francis. I'm with Jerry Johnston, and he is the Geospatial Information Officer at EPA. Mr. Johnston, great to have you on.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks.
As the guests and as the guests stream down here toward breakfast, and we're about to get underway. So we know what a chief information officer is, and we know what all kinds of officers are. What does a geospatial information officer do that's special that's not what the CIOs do?
Well, as you might imagine, I get that question a lot. It is kind of an unusual title, although we do have a number of them, and it's kind of a growing title across government. So really, my role at the EPA is twofold. It's first and foremost to coordinate geospatial activity, mapping, the use of spatial data, the use of satellite imagery inside the agency, and to make sure our staff have what they need. And second, to coordinate across agencies with our state partners and with the private sector. So really to make sure that EPA has the data and the tools that it needs to accomplish its mission.
Now, since its founding, EPA has been all about information from emitting sources and so forth. So in a way, you are the ultimate spatial agency because everything you gather has to do with a certain location or area. So what's changing now about geospatial information in terms of technology?
Well, you're right. I mean, EPA, everything we do is place-based. Our entire mission, you know, is carried out over, you know, communities, over states, over watersheds, and so on. And the technology has changed a lot in the last several years. This used to be a really specialty discipline that we had professionals that were the, kind of the practitioners that did all this work behind the scenes. But with the advent of a lot of commercial geospatial technologies, Garmin, Google Earth, and things like that, the technology has become much more commonplace, and we have a lot more people at the agency using it, and a lot of our stakeholders are using it as well. So really, it's exploded in the last 5 to 6 years.
It's probably safe to say that it's become democratized with everyone having geospatial. For $100. You can buy a system that tells you where you are in the world versus 20 years ago.
Absolutely. I remember, you know, 15 years ago or so, and we used to have to go out and collect GPS by putting a giant antenna above, you know, wherever you were working and things like that, and now you probably have 2 or 3 GPS devices, you know, near you right now, so they're everywhere.
So how is this technology helping? Let's start with the internals of EPA management itself. How is the new approach to geospatial helping EPA internally?
Sure. Two different things there. One is with respect to our actual policy analysts and the scientists who are doing their work and carrying out their mission across our different programs. We're using geospatial technology much more broadly for doing our analyses, for doing risk assessments, for doing modeling, for understanding hazardous waste sites and things like that. Second, we're using it a lot more in the executive management ranks for the senior managers to be able to take a look and understand how their programs are operating, and to look at performance measures in a spatial context I think is particularly interesting and something we're starting to do now.
So is the data more fine-grained now than it used to be in terms of location?
We have more data now, and I guess we're more confident in the locations on our data. So that's one of the thing. One of the data sets we manage at EPA, for example, is we call the Facilities Registry System, which is a database of all the sites in the United States that have environmental permits of any kind. Over the last several years, that data has gotten better and better. And you mentioned the democratization of data. That's in large part because we started publishing maps with that data on it, and the public came back and said, this isn't in the right place, and that's not in the right place. So it's helped us improve the quality of the data over time.
And we're going to get to the public aspect of this, the open government aspect. Yeah. But for managers at EPA, how can they use geospatial information? Give us an example of how they can use that to measure a program performance.
Sure. One thing that we're working on right now, we call our community-based programs across the agency. So we're trying to look at how different programs at the agency service specific communities, be they real geographic boundaries. Environmental justice communities is another area, so underserved communities across the country. We're taking a lot of the performance measures, for example, from our environmental justice program and trying to display them on maps, so showing where have we given grants over the course of the last several years and how does that correspond to environmental justice situations on the ground across the country, and then outcomes. You know, how are things improving across the country, hopefully because of investments that the agency is making?
We're talking to Jerry Johnston. He's the EPA's Geospatial Information Officer. Now let's turn it around and talk about the public, because there's a giant open government, you've probably heard, initiative going on. And so how does this geospatial information translate into openness to the public?
I work on the data.gov program. I've been lucky to be a part of it since the beginning. So one of the things that we're working on right now is enhancing the geospatial capabilities in data.gov as one major open government initiative. Over the last year or so, throughout the existence of data.gov, we've grown the number of geospatial data sets that are available there, but we've always had a goal from the beginning to make that much more accessible, so to put maps on data.gov and to get that information out there. We've accomplished, you know, kind of the first step of that, which is getting a really simple map out so people can actually visualize all the spatial data that's in the system. But really, as time goes on, we want to make sure that the collaboration goes both ways, that we're not just publishing data, that we build communities that people can share those maps that they're looking at, ask us for more data, and collaborate with each other and with the government. So data.gov is one big piece of what we're doing. Another related activity is called the Geospatial Platform. That's something that's kind of just getting underway, but if you go to geoplatform.gov, you can see a document that kind of outlines, you know, the path ahead. But we're looking at a shared cross-agency platform for doing, you know, for publishing geospatial data and for mapping and things like that.
Now, you had a lot of this information and data before data.gov.
Sure.
It must have been hard to get.
Yeah, one of the advantages that the geospatial community had, I think, over, you know, most of the rest of the federal government was we had a head start in terms of collecting all of our data. So in the Clinton administration, there was an executive order that was signed that required that federal agencies started creating metadata and cataloging all their geospatial data. So we've had that going for over 10 years now and have been collecting all that. So it's taken a really long time. But the result is we have a huge, you know, volume of data that's cataloged and available.
But safe to say that data.gov gave you a channel so that you could funnel it all out there and much more easy.
We're reaching a lot more people. We've had geodata.gov for years, but that was really focused more on our community, on the practitioner community, where data.gov gives us a whole new, you know, world to kind of interact with.
Is there any evidence that anyone's built applications from outside using EPA data?
Yeah, we do have some good examples of that. WhatWeKnow.org is a great example of somebody that's taken our toxics release inventory data, for example, and tied it in with census data and other information to give snapshots of communities and what environmental conditions are like across the country. So we're seeing a lot of really interesting things.
And so is this something used by academics or community activists or local selectmen? I mean, who's using this information?
Well, I hope all of the above, but you know, it's the academics and the private sector that are building some of those things right now, for the most part, really with their audience in large part being the environmental activist community, the communities of interest that EPA has.
So people can download data sets that are narrow to a geographical area, so they don't have to download everything and swamp their whole system.
Yeah,
right?
And that's important. We do have very, very large data sets, and with some of our larger ones, I mentioned the facilities registry system earlier, for example, you can go through and kind of pick out the pieces you want.
All right, before we let you go, what are you going to be speaking about this morning at the ELC conference when people are getting their bacon and eggs right now, but eventually they'll be sitting and listening to you?
Sure.
What will you talk about?
I'm on a panel that we're talking about data availability, actually open data, how we're going to, how geospatial fits into the open data puzzle, how we continue to advance over the course of the next couple of years with making government information more widely available.
All right, Jerry Johnston is EPA's Geospatial Information Officer. Great talking with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
And at the ELC, I'm Tom Temin, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.